Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. My guest this week is old friend Judith Quoba. Judith is going to give us an update on what's been going on in Africa lately. Yes, the world is hearing again and again about what's going on in Iran, but we must remember that things are going on elsewhere as well. So I thought I'd bring back our resident expert on all things Africa, among other things, Judith Quoba. So without any further ado, Judith, welcome back to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Yeah, thank you, James, for having me. Let me just say something. I guess I said it before when you were on my show. There is a reason why we should pay more attention to what is going on in Africa. A huge chunk of the Western population is completely oblivious to Africa. But here's the thing. Africa, the entire continent, releases 1 million people into the workforce every month, not every year, every month. So this means one out of four only gets a job in the formal sector. The rest try it overseas, and those who cannot get jobs overseas, yeah. What do you think? Where will they go? Yeah, exactly. That is where they will go. So, if anybody is interested that you are not completely flooded with I illegal immigration, then please pay attention. And if there is a good movement, because there are good people in Africa that are fighting tooth and nails to get something done and to get their countries onto a path of development, support them, be their voice, flood the social media with it. I'm not asking anybody to move to Africa and become the freedom fighter, but pay attention. And if you do not know where to start, here's a little tip. You can become a free member of my Patreon page. And those articles, videos, and whatever I publish there in that regard is always free. I covered last year the uprising in Nepal and the toppling of the government. I also covered the uprising in Kenya in 2024. I covered the overthrow of the government in Madagascar last year. So I post a lot of things about, yeah, the people against the government, you could say, but it has definitely a focus on Africa. That does not mean other countries do not appear there, but my main focus is on Africa. So that is what you can do if you have no idea where to start, because that is what I'm hearing many, many times. We hear nothing here in the news. Yeah, well, you can find it, but you have to be interested in it. If I can find it, everybody can find it. So that means if you do not know where to start, just join the page for free and take it from there. And then, rather sooner than later, you will have an idea how to get information. So, today our focus will be on Uganda. And I paid a lot of attention to the entire campaign time in January. This year, on the 15th, Uganda held elections. The election was rigged by Museveni. And I followed the Bobi Wine campaign very closely. Bobi Wine is his nom de plume. He is used to be a musician. His real name is Robert Chagulani Sentamu, but for the purposes of this video, I will call him Bobi Wine. And he grew up in the ghetto. And as a lot of young people, I guess Uganda has the youngest population in the entire world, if I'm not mistaken. They were sitting together with their friends and music producers, and then they thought, well, if the parliament is not coming to the ghetto, then let's take the ghetto to the parliament. And Bobby Wine ran for a parliament seat. He won that election, and he was a member of parliament. And he ran in 2021 for president. He won that. Museveni rigged that again. And I will share something. That is weird. Okay. So, because something happened last Saturday, the 14th of March, and why is this video not showing now? Can you pause it a little bit?
Yeah.
Ugandans, friends of Uganda all over the world, by the time you see this video, I will have left the country for some critical engagements outside Uganda. And at the right time, I will come back and continue with the cause. I thank all of you, fellow Ugandans, who have concealed and protected me for all this time when the regime was looking for me. Those of you who fed me, those who clothed me, and those who offered me shelter. I will not mention your names, but God bless you. I thank the men and women in uniform who defied the illegal orders and, instead of arresting me, gave me the information that I needed to keep safe. I thank the priests who prepared mass for me and supported my spiritual life when I needed it most. I thank my family for staying strong in these tough times. I want to thank in a very special way the people of Uganda for your prayers, for your support, and your encouragement. You have once again demonstrated that once you believe in something, especially an idea of liberation, you will contribute the little that you have, including risking your lives and your families to protect those that are fighting for that idea. You did this before in the 1980s, and you have done it again in 2026. And I'm sure you will continue doing it whenever it's necessary. Just different times, different generations, but same mission, a mission to freedom. It's laughable that for almost 2 months, the entire security apparatus of Uganda has invested billions of taxpayers' money to search for me everywhere, but they failed to get me. Why? Because the people have protected me. They have staged roadblocks everywhere, searching vehicles and even forcing motorcycle riders and their passengers to remove helmets, causing traffic jam and inconveniencing citizens, all on the orders of Museveni's son. They have raided homes of my comrades searching for me. I mean, just 2 days ago, they raided the home of my personal assistant, Comrade Don Sheriff Naja. And when they didn't find me or him, they abducted his wife. And she's still missing up to the present. Good enough, all this was caught on camera. You have seen what happened to the nine police officers that were assigned to me by the Electoral Commission during the campaigns. They were arrested, they were detained, and now they've been dismissed from the police force with disgrace, apparently, because they did not aid the regime in spying on me and preventing me from leaving my house on the 16th of January, even when their assignment was over and they were officially withdrawn on the 15th of January. Now, I want to say this again to you, fellow citizens. We won the 2026 presidential elections. We won it, and Museveni rigged it. And that is why, out of shame and lack of legitimacy, him and his son are searching for me everywhere. They raided my home. on the 16th of January, but I was able to escape from them. A few days later, they conducted another raid. And in this raid, they assaulted my wife and family members. They vandalized our house. They stole various items and occupied our home. And up to now, our home is still surrounded by the military. Now, this is why I'm hiding, and that's why I'm leaving the country for a while. We decided to fight back, not only within the country, but also internationally. And among the things that we hope to pursue are targeted sanctions against Museveni and his enablers. We also want those countries that are funding Museveni's killing machine to stop, and if possible, to completely cut ties with the regime in Uganda. In the recent days, we've been speaking on international platforms, although we've been doing it virtually. Now, we are going to be doing it physically. And on that note, I want to notify the comrades and leadership in the diaspora that I will be with you in the coming days. Let us prepare to lobby, to mobilize, to organize, and push back against the violations in Uganda. In my absence, my deputy president, Dr. Lina Zedriga, who has just been released from prison, will be acting president. After doing my work on the international platform, I will return back to my country and let the regime do whatever they want to me in full view of the world. After all, I've not committed any crime. Running for president is not a crime. For now, I ask you, comrades, to remain firm, to remain united, and to keep the hope alive. People power, our power. Our power, people power. For God and my country.
So, yeah, that was a lot to unpack there. In 2021, he also ran into trouble during the election time, and the Museveni government almost tortured him to death. His international lawyer, Robert Amsterdam, he intervened, he got him out of prison, and he took him to the United States so that he could get some medical treatment. And this time around, they, as he said, the Electoral Commission has assigned 13 police officers to every candidate. And they moved throughout Uganda with Bobi Wine, and they were released of this duty on the 15th. But now the regime has arrested them. Allegedly, they have helped him on the 16th when the military and the police came in and raided his house. That they had to escape Bobby Wine. So, how is that even possible? If you were released of your duty on the 15th, how can you help him on the 16th to escape? But the Museveni regime is a little bit in a tailspin. And I have prepared another visual aid and that was the reason why Museveni was here it is. So the situation is the following. On the 16th, Bobby Wine fled his house with nothing more than his shirt on the back. He found shelter with regular Ugandans. My personal feeling is that he survived in the ghetto. He definitely would not have gone to a personal friend, a party member, or whatever, because that is where they search first. That is for sure. And Bobby Wine grew up in the ghetto. He knows how to adjust and how to survive there. So, and then a couple of days later, after he disappeared, and what makes this so tragic and sent the entire Museveni family in a tailspin is he made it outside Uganda, and this is the state house. So.
Fellow Ugandans and friends of Uganda all over the world, my name is Kyagulanyi Ssentamu Robert, also known as Bobi Wine, and today is the 24th of January, 2026. It's exactly 8 days since I escaped from my own house following a raid that was carried out by the military and police at my home on the orders of Muhoozi Kainerugaba, Museveni's son, and the Chief of Defense Forces. We had gotten earlier intelligence from our friends within the army that he had issued orders to his men to come and harm me. So when we saw them jumping over our fence on the night of 16th January, I somehow escaped from my home and left. That night, they didn't enter into our house. They stopped in the compound. 3 days ago, they once again jumped into our fence, hurled profanities to my wife, and threatened to break into my house. That was the second time. Now, last night was the third time for them to raid us. They came in hundreds, according to my wife. They broke every door in our house, including those that were not locked. They took away all our documents, from academic documents, land title deeds, and all important documents. They took every gadget, phones, chargers, they took our internet system. They even took all the laptops, including children's school laptops. They also took away our CCTV camera system and destroyed anything that they could destroy, broke glass and cut even our chairs. They put my wife on gunpoint, demanding that she shows them where I was. They even forced her to remove the passwords from her phone and our laptops, but she refused. Well, these and many things that Museveni's regime is doing through his son and his other people are not signs of strength. These are signs of weakness. If Museveni claims that he won the election, why is he panicking? Why is he doing all manner of terrible things? Why is he harassing people? Why is he harassing me and my family? Those are signs of shame. Those are signs of illegitimacy. Now, my message to you, fellow Ugandans, I am not in my home because I still want to be able to speak to you like I'm doing. I'm not in my home because my life is threatened. I take this opportunity, first of all, to thank the international community for the voices that they've raised, but to also encourage them to keep an eye on Uganda, especially at this critical time. To you, fellow Ugandans, this is our country. All this is being done to intimidate us. They've abducted two of my deputy presidents, Lina Zedriga and Jolly Kamshaba. We don't know where they are. They've arrested Mwanga Chivumi, my deputy president in charge of Buganda region, and many other comrades to sow fear in us. I encourage you to be strong, to be smart, to be creative. These people are not as strong as they purport, and indeed, they're not as smart as they are. They failed to find me for 8 days. I also tell you that we must never give up. Uganda is our country, and we must fight and liberate it. I will resurface at an appropriate time to forward our struggle. In the meantime, I'm not home because I'm trying to keep safe, I'm trying to keep alive, and I want to keep communicating to you. We shall overcome, we shall be free. People power, our power.
So, and that was a little bit too much for Museveni. He got very, very paranoid at that time. And I think he had moments when he thought that Bobi Wine was sleeping under his bed, because the entire security apparatus was looking for him. As he said, they spent billions. They couldn't find him for 2 months now. So, do you have any questions?
Yes, tell us What we need to know about Museveni, the Ugandan president, if that's how you pronounce his name, is he supported by foreign players? How much legitimacy does he have?
In terms of legitimacy from the people, none. maybe like 10 to 20%. But those are usually people who somehow benefit from his regime. We know from experience, no regime can ever be so bad that it doesn't find any fans. And so what is changing right now? We had Senator Risch from the United States urging to review the relationship between the United States and Uganda, because Uganda has become, as he said, an exporter of violence. What is finally dawning on them is that Kagame in Rwanda and Museveni in Uganda, they own M23, the militia group. And that militia group has done horrible atrocities in Sudan, South Sudan, and in the Congo. So this means currently everything for Museveni is on the chopping block. The EU also came out and made a statement that they are reviewing the entire relationship with Uganda. Robert Amsterdam, Bobby Wine's lawyer, he filed a case against Uganda and Tanzania to be suspended from the Commonwealth, because the Commonwealth Charter has very specific rules in terms of political rules and freedom of speech and how the justice system should run, and none of that is fulfilled, neither in Uganda nor in Tanzania or in Kenya for that matter. I call these three, Ruto in Kenya, Samia Suluhu Hassan in Tanzania, and Yoweri Museveni, I call them the Trinity of Terror. So, and the reason why I spent so much, paid so much attention to the Ugandan election was what happened in Tanzania. And the Tanzanian people were protesting. Hardly anybody voted. They boycotted the entire election because they knew it was a sham. They also stopped vehicles and found, these voting papers that were already, they already were marked for Samia Suluhu. And so they stopped those vehicles, and there was huge protest. And Samia Suluhu thought it was a good idea to butcher 20,000 of her own people. If anybody is interested, all the footage that I could find, it's raw footage, it's not AI. I put that all together into 9 videos, but those are only on Odyssey, because that is the only platform where you can upload something like that. It is harsh, but it will show you the cold hard truth. Because what Samia Suluhu did, and that is what these leaders in East Africa liked to do, Samia Suluhu, she imported Ugandan soldiers put them into Tanzanian uniforms. And then it was hunting time, yeah. And these people even went into people houses and shut them down, even people who had nothing to do with the protests. So that was such a horrible time. And I thought, okay, so now we are going to have the election in Uganda. I will pay some attention to that. It was clear to me from day one that Museveni will rig the election. He always does that. Even when he came in power 47 years ago. Yeah, he has been in power for 47 years. There are generations of people who have never seen a different president. So at that time, before he came in power, he only got 2% of the votes. And then he plunged the entire country, yeah, into a war. 500,000 Ugandans lost their lives. And he has been sticking there in office ever since. And he runs the country as his personal property. If you're interested, just type it in. It's still on YouTube where Museveni says, I only work for my family. So he flat out says it, that he couldn't care less about Uganda. The whole thing is about him and his family. And so what this means now is that the international support is diminishing strongly. And that is also the reason why Bobby Wine, I guess, is now lobbying in foreign countries. He's also nominated for a prize that he will get in April. And that prize is called Hero of Democracy, and that will be in New York. We will see if he will attend physically. He addressed the European Union via the internet, the Commission of Human Rights also via the internet. Now he's out of Uganda, and yeah, I think it is important that European countries also look at themselves because, for instance, the tear gas that are being used to disperse crowds, and they did that also during the Bobby Wine campaign, attacked the crowds that were listening to his speeches with tear gas. That tear gas comes from the UK. The weapon that they are looking at, you know, when the soldier or the policeman is aiming at them. That comes largely from the UK and the US. So, yeah, I think it is very, very necessary that foreign countries stop funding Museveni's killing machine.
The president you mentioned, been there for 46, 47 years. I imagine if that's the case, he's been propped up at some level by Western countries, NATO, America, Britain, and France, what have you. What do they seem to want out of him? What are the main resources? Are the resources getting to the people, or like in many other places, are they just being shipped out by the transnationals?
They used him as a so-called stabilizer in other countries where there were conflicts. But as I said, now they are waking up to the fact that, as Senator Risch said, Uganda has turned into an exporter of violence into other African countries. We have a completely new administration in the United States, as we all know, and they see it very, very differently now. So, which means it doesn't look good for Museveni right now. And I will go into the woo-woo stuff in the second hour, because we also have a lot of whistleblower testimony. And but I also wanted to give a visual aid what it really looks like if you are running against Museveni in Uganda. So here we have, this is the first item. Here we have Bobby Wine. He was blocked in Gulu by the military and the police to reach his campaign spot.
Want to go and see my office, and then I proceed and go and campaign. We have not done anything wrong. We have not done anything wrong. We are going to our office, okay? I am going to the office, and then I'm proceeding to the rally. We have not done anything wrong. You look how many soldiers are here. At whom have attacked our rally, and our people. We've not done anything wrong. Now, I want the journalists to look. Women are covering their faces and they are protected by the military. Now, you, the security given to me by the Electoral Commission, I'm going to move by myself, okay? All by myself. Yes. We are here to campaign. Please, the soldiers and police officers, don't do this. You are.
So that was the moment where they blocked him. And now we will have a look at when it was clear that the military and the police will not remove the vehicles, he jumped out of the car and walked to where he was supposed to be. And this is what happened.
Président Yemiko.
Back to my president, Jimmy, go. Back to my president, Jimmy, go. See, talking that you. Junior, we know you, sir. So pretend. We start with your kids. Pretend. President, Dani Magic, I'm not season to
Yeah, and here we have Dan Magic, that is Bobby Wine's music producer with a severe head wound. So I will stop the video here, but so that everybody has an idea what it looks like, you know, to run as a presidential candidate. Here we have Dan Magic again.
Guarding us. That deep attacking us, guarded by the police and the military. And now they are beating us for campaigning in a place that the Electoral Commission knows we're supposed to be campaigning. The Electoral Commission knows we're supposed to be campaigning here. Look at what they are doing to us. Look at what the police and the military are doing to us for no crime whatsoever. But we shall overcome. We shall overcome. We shall be free. Uganda will be free. Because Uganda is our country.
Yeah. But I will also, there were very happy moments. And this one is one of them. So that was, as you can see, a lot of rain. It was raining cats and dogs, but the people did not go away. He was attracting such huge crowds, and I think that also made Museveni very, very nervous. And here is one reason why I believe that Bobby Wine is the legitimate president of Uganda. Here is the counting of the votes. And there are many, many videos like that on the internet. And it's basically always the same. So we will have a look a little bit.
Yeah.
So they're counting out the votes there.
So, but yeah, so you can see they were very, very excited when the counting, what they did was a protest vote. So, meaning you voted, you stayed at the station when the counting was going on. And as you have seen, it was Jagulani, Jagulani, Jagulani. The other one had like five papers in his hand. And the assistant from NUP, the National Unity Platform, that is Bobby Wine's party, yeah, she got all the votings, and the people were cheering. So, what the Museveni regime then did, these representatives of NUP at the tallying stations, they were arrested. And, or they came in with tear gas and what have you. And at the end of the day, they switched the numbers. Allegedly, Bobby Wine got round about 20% or something, and Museveni 71 something. It's exactly the opposite. They took Bobby Wine's number, announced it as Museveni's numbers, and then thought by arresting Bobby Wine, they could get away with it. But as we have seen, he escaped, and now he is out of the country, and he will be talking to many, many people and lobbying, as he said, for targeted sanctions.
Your volume went down a little bit. Could you check that just to make sure?
My volume.
Let me make it louder on my end. Oh,
Yeah.
you sound better now. It might just be you're closer to the mic or something.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh,
I
that's a lot
didn't.
better. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't change anything.
Okay.
Weird. Yeah, and that is why I really believe he would be the legitimate president. I also think he would be a good choice because he does not come in at the helm of a gun. Uganda has never had, after independence, has never had anybody that did not come in with chaos, war, and what have you. And because I have observed him practically during the entire campaign, on a daily basis, he carried himself flawlessly, even when he was beaten, when they were attacked, when they sprayed pepper spray straight to his face. He never attacked them, not even verbally. And he is a very humble human being. So I think he would be really a good choice for Uganda.
Has his wife gotten out of jail, or is she still in jail?
No, his wife, yeah, that is a story. If you are interested, type in Babi Chagulani in hospital, or if you cannot spell Chagulani, then Bobby Wine's wife in hospital. NTV Uganda will come straight up, and she explains what happened to her. They stripped her naked. They sat with four soldiers on her. She finally fainted. Afterwards, she woke up on the veranda in her own vomit. They strangled her. They broke, as he said, every door in the house. They destroyed the sofa sets, everything that was in the house. They took their title deeds, their academic papers, and basically they destroyed the entire house, and it is now more or less a military barrack. Babi Chagulani, the neighbors, took her to hospital after she was assaulted, and from that hospital she never returned home, and she fled the country with her children. Two of the older children, I guess they are both in the United States studying there. And I have no idea where he is right now, and I think it's better that way. But for the moment, I'm just happy that he's out of the country.
Has there been any effort on the part of the US or some other country to talk about him favorably, like what's being done to him is wrong and
As I said, Senator Risch, for instance, and Robert Amsterdam, he is also not only based in not only based in London, he also is based in the United States. Museveni himself feels, after what happened to Maduro, and after what, Bobby Wine, when he made that video that we saw, where we in the beginning saw the State House, he convinced himself that he is going to be the next one on Trump's list. That is what he thinks. And that is what we know from the whistleblowers. And that is why he, and especially his son, Muhosi Kainerugaba, that's a piece of work. He went to X, and he posted that, yeah, we are, so far we only killed 22 NUP members, but we promise to do better. And indicating that the 23rd should be Bobby Wine. And then there was a Kenyan international journalist, and he asked him on X, why are you bragging about killing Ugandans? And yeah, Muhoozi then blocked him. For asking such a question. He also posted that he is going to castrate Bobby Wine once he has him in his torture chamber. Yeah, and on it goes. He later on deleted those tweets, but as you know, the internet does not really forget, and you will find many articles where all his tweets are still visible, although he has deleted them.
The son of Museveni, that's saying all these things. And Museveni, he feels that he may be abducted also, a la
Yeah,
Maduro.
he's in a tailspin. He is, because he knows what he has done. He knows he rigged the election. He knows that Ugandans do not no longer want him. And especially when, after what happened to Maduro, I saw on social media a lot of people, even from Kenya, "Hey, Mr. Trump, can you come and get Ruto? We will pay for his ticket. You don't have, we will pay for it. Just take him out." And others holding the same sign for Museveni in Uganda. And after that, a video that Bobi Wine made where he was in the vicinity of the state house that they couldn't find him. Museveni convinced himself, "I am next in line."
Well, I hope Bobby Wine continues to hide out because if Museveni is desperate enough, he could send assassins into America or wherever he's hiding, right? Because we know that's happened a lot in the past when, well, especially these states sponsored by the U.S. during the Cold War, they would send their assassins into America to kill people, right? So, yeah, he needs to still watch out for himself.
Yeah, definitely. They have also Dr. Kizza Besigye. He was abducted from Kenya and has been held for over 500 days now in prison, and he still didn't have a trial. And now James is gone.
I just had to let somebody out the door, but go ahead.
Okay. And every time they do not grant him bail, but the court proceeding does not happen. He never had a trial, and his health is so bad right now. He is in a very dark prison cell without any window, and I think what they are trying to do is they do not really want a trial. They are just hoping that he's going to die in prison before the entire thing goes to court.
What do you think the prognosis is for Uganda going forward? What do you think that the U.S. will back Bobi Wine or they'll
Yeah, I
find
think
somebody
that.
else?
I think they will. Not like in Iran, yeah, please. No. But there are so many voices now, with the EU, with the senators, and on it goes. Museveni probably thought that with the beginning of the Iran war, that he was a little bit out of focus, but he was mistaken. They didn't forget about him. He is not the main subject right now, that is for sure, but in the background, the wheels are turning.
U.S. AFRICOM is very busy, as you know, throughout sub-Saharan Africa. And also, they can get, depending on the distances and location, NATO allies like France to intervene as well. So, if he's out of the way and then and Bobi Wine takes over, let's see how they plan to work with him or how they plan to use him going forward, aside from trying to avoid being killed by Museveni and his assassins. What do you think Bobby Wine needs to do if let's say you were his advisor and was whispering into his ear, well, what would some of the things you would tell him? What would be some of the things you'd tell him?
So Bobby Wine is fully aware that he will take over a failed state. Yeah. All the institutions have been state captured. There is no independent judiciary. There is basically it's a family-run business, Uganda, yeah, and that is why the vast majority is poor, stays poor, and always will be poor in that system. What I would advise is he also knows he mentioned that in his campaign speeches that each year 10 trillion Ugandan shillings get lost. That these are official numbers from the Treasury. So that money disappears in channels where nobody exactly knows. I mean, yeah, I know it's going to the Museveni family, but okay, that is point number one. You have to block this, self-serving system that is in the parliament and that has taken root in a lot of African countries. Kenya has the same problem, and I think it would be good to do what Traore did in Burkina Faso. And he not only did he slash the income by 30% of all parliamentarians, he also made it very clear. You think about stealing $1, you go to jail. And that is where he really, really has to put an end to, public servants, lining their own pockets, and nothing ever goes forward. If he can stop that the 10 trillion disappear every year, he has enough money, to finally build the roads so that they are no longer driving through these potholes. Because the roads that you see in Uganda, they were built by Obote and Idi Amin. Museveni practically didn't build anything in terms of infrastructure. And once you launch that infrastructure project, of course, you will create also a lot of jobs for people. And because without proper roads, and imagine Uganda only has one airport, the one in Entebbe, and so depending on where you live in Uganda and you have to leave the country, you have to drive for hours to reach an airport. Uganda is also losing every day 16 infants during birth. And the number of mothers that do not survive birth is also very high. So there is enough to do, but the first thing you have to do is stop the corruption at the highest level. And you also have to root it out as an idea, because it has deep, deep roots in the entire societies of African countries. Corruption has become so normal that I hate the word re-educate, but because it always sounds like forceful, but you sometimes. You definitely have to change how people look at corruption in general. You cannot only point fingers at the top, but then you think, for yourself, it's okay. I recently saw a survey that was done in Kenya among the Gen Zs. And the Gen Zs had the huge uprising in 2024. And that survey was about, would you take a bribe? And 4 out of 6 said yes. So the biggest voices against government corruption say, yes, we would take bribes. And there is the problem, exactly at that point. You cannot have it both ways. Either it is accountability all the way, or you have no accountability. And that is the point where Africa has to grow up. Tribalism and the attitude towards corruption has to change. If that doesn't change, the continent will go to the dogs.
Nepotism is through the roof. Instead of a meritocracy, putting like an economist or somebody into become the finance minister, it's their brother or their sister or somebody that they put in a key positions. And so you have a lot of incompetence, and then on top of that, you have a lot of the graft and corruption. And whatever, wherever there's corruption, there's always going to be people like piranhas feeding on whatever scraps there are left, right? In the time that we have left in this first segment, what, if any, kind of foreign debt load does Uganda have? Like so many countries in the world, they've become indebted to U.S. Corporations, to U.S. banks, to the IMF. What does it look like in Uganda? As far as that.
Unfortunately, I didn't look up the correct numbers, but you are right. They have to service a lot of debt. And the sad thing is, the debt that they got in the beginning hasn't been used for anything constructive in the country. It just disappeared, and Ugandans have to pay it off. I know that the World Bank, for instance, they stopped any cooperation with Uganda for a while, but they picked it up last year. Well, if Bobby Wine takes over, he has to negotiate with the debtors. Yeah. And personally, I think that IMF, World Bank, they should stay. He should keep them away from the country. Yes, service the debt, but negotiate better conditions. I think what he should do is get investors, you know, with specific projects and then oversee those projects, not like, you know, projects that I see time and again in Kenya. Oh, here we are building this and that. And then there is a fence and a sign, and nothing ever happens. Yeah, that you go there 3 years later, there's still a sign and a fence, and not one building has been erected.
Level of real estate and development fraud is worldwide. It seems to be the thing to do for people on the inside is real estate fraud. So well, we reached the end of a fascinating first segment with our guest Judith Koba. Judith, can you give our listeners and viewers an idea of how they can find your work online?
Yeah, so my YouTube channel is called Night Flight, and it's Night Flight is also on Patreon. You can find the Patreon link on my YouTube channel. And as I said, if you are interested, and I think at this particular point it has to do with self-preservation, we should pay attention to Africa and support those people that want a different Africa, an independent Africa, and an Africa that can become a real partner instead of, you know, the punching ball. of the
Yeah,
rest of the
yes,
world.
because if Africa ever becomes self-sufficient and they can become modern functional societies, there will be no desire for anyone to want to emigrate and leave Africa, right? They'd want to stay there and build their country and build their societies up. So hopefully that comes to pass, if, as long as there's not too much interference from all these other external powers too. That's another thing. Well, we've reached the end of the first segment with our guest, Judith Quoba. If you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment.